This is Brian Cambrio with this news for the KVNF listening area, Friday, June 8, 2012. The governor's TBD initiative will host 6 public meetings across the state this month. The goal is to hear from as many Coloradans as possible about the big policy changes facing the state. Lawmakers in both parties praise the initiative, but many question what will come from it. Benta Brooklyn has more for us from the state capitol.
The topics up for discussion include pretty much everything from health care, education, transportation, to the state's workforce and the budget. Kay Rader is the executive director of the TBD project, which stands for To Be Determined.
How can we, thinking of competing priorities, best spend our dollars? And so that's what the focus will be on.
Rader says participants will break into small groups to craft their own state budgets and then come back together to create one combined budget using a keypad to vote on items they want to keep or cut.
That will give us an inkling into what Coloradans want to do, if they want to live within their means and make cuts, or if they're willing to increase revenue.
According to a study last year from the University of Denver, Colorado was on an unsustainable financial path. The state constitution requires mandatory increases in education spending, but at the same time, the Taxpayers' Bill of Rights, or Tabor Amendment, restricts what revenue the state can keep. Lisa Wiles with the group Great Education Colorado. She's particularly concerned because schools have faced deep budget cuts over the last several years.
Right now, at least in the capital, the sense is that the only thing they can do is cut. And the cuts have been devastating.
While funding for K-12 and higher education wasn't as severe as in recent years, Wiles says more money is still needed. And she says she hopes when more people learn about high class sizes, fewer teachers, and rapidly rising college tuition, they'll want to do something.
Some folks say that we're not going to do anything in Colorado on a budget issue, on the big picture, until we are in a crisis. We are in a crisis, and that's what TBD, I think, is allowing people to tell each other.
But a tax increase could be tough politically. Many of the state's Republican leaders say they won't be on board with raising taxes, be it for education or anything else. Speaker of the House Frank McNulty of Highlands Ranch says he's glad the governor is reaching out to hear from everyday people, but he hopes it's not part of a larger plan to test the waters for a future tax increase.
If he's using this as the opening salvo in an effort to increase taxes on Colorado's working families and small businesses, he's going to run into problems. As they work through this, they need to be very careful that that's not the case.
Governor John Hickenlooper has said he's not gunning for any particular outcome and truly just wants to hear from more people about their own priorities. He's also said he doesn't think voters have the appetite for a tax increase. John Strayer is a political science professor at Colorado State University and follows the legislature closely. He says he hopes all the work amounts to something.
Is this just going to be another report? We've had quite a number of them before. There is absolutely no shortage of data.
Strayer says there is a shortage when it comes to the public understanding the state's challenges and constraints. He says an even tougher hurdle may be selling any proposed plan to elected officials and other community leaders.
And that's the question at the tail end of all of this. Are we going to do anything about it?
TBD Executive Director Kay Rader says she's optimistic that all the conversations won't be for nothing.
We've had a lot of people who are banking on the fact that we are going to come up with some actionable outcomes. So it is our hope that when we tee up this written report, that it will be taken seriously.
TBD's meetings will wrap up later this month. Rader and other advisors will then analyze the data and write a final report for lawmakers and the governor by the end of the year. I'm Benta Berkland at the State Capitol.
Yesterday, Metropolitan State College of Denver became the first school in Colorado to create a new tuition category specifically for illegal immigrants who graduate from Colorado high schools. The tuition would be significantly lower than the out-of-state rate the students currently pay. It mirrors a bill that failed in the state legislature. Here's Benta Brooklyn again with more from the state capitol.
The vote was just shy of unanimous, and for many in the Student Center ballroom, emotional. Victor is a student at Metro State. He's also an illegal immigrant and didn't want to give his last name. He says he can't believe this day has finally arrived.
I work 2 jobs, and still, you know, to not be able to afford tuition is ridiculous.
Victor says after 4 years, he should have graduated already. He got choked up talking about the new tuition policy, and then burst into tears after the interview.
Finally, I have that opportunity. I'm so relieved that somebody finally stepped up.
To be eligible for the new tuition rate, illegal immigrant students must have attended a Colorado high school for a minimum of 3 years and graduated from that school. They also have to sign a form pledging to one day seek citizenship. Former Speaker of the House and Metro State Trustee Terrence Carroll sees it as a vote for hope and opportunity.
When you disenfranchise and you remove a group of people from the civic canopy and you say that somehow you're a secondary class of citizens, that's a recipe for disaster.
Carroll says he's disappointed lawmakers weren't able to pass a statewide version during this year's legislative session.
Sometimes our political leaders are behind the times, and it's important for us to lead the way.
The Colorado legislature has tried and failed several times to pass a similar bill. In recent years, Republican lawmakers have been the roadblock. Senator Nancy Spence of Centennial sits on the Senate Education Committee. She says she feels sorry for the students, but also thinks allowing them to pay lower tuition will only set them up for failure.
Until the DREAM Act is passed, or until Congress takes some action, there is not a way that students without documentation can work. And I wish it was different. I understand how frustrated and unhappy the students must be, and I get that. There's not anything that we can do about it at the state level.
For Republican Speaker of the House Frank McNulty of Highlands Ranch, it's a question of authority.
It appears that Metro State College is attempting an end run around the legislature. We're interested to learn whether the proposal that they put forward violates federal law, whether it runs contrary to state law, and these are the questions that we're asking now.
There is a very clear history in this state of the authority of governing boards to establish non-resident tuition.
That's Metro State President Stephen Jordan. He says the school has followed the law and that students won't receive any public money or tax dollars. Jordan says the new tuition policy aligns with the school's mission to be inclusive.
We serve more students of color than any other institution in the state of Colorado.
Jordan estimates 300 students would take advantage of the lower tuition category next year. The rate would still be higher than in-state tuition, but about half as much as out-of-state rates. Fanny Garcia says she hopes she can now finish her degree. She's 25 and wants to one day serve in the Air Force and become a pilot.
My country, my nation, my land is the one that I stand on right now. You guys will be doing the right thing. Nobody should be denied higher education.
Proponents of the policy say they won't give up on passing a bill at the State House. So far, Metro State is the only school in Colorado that's been willing to go it alone. I'm Benta Berkland at the State Capitol.
Capitol coverage from Rocky Mountain Community Radio is supported by Colorado River District, celebrating its 75th year of protecting western Colorado water and reminding all that in this historic year of low snowpack, protecting and conserving water is more important than ever. More at coloradoriverdistrict.org.
Governor John Hickenlooper signed House Bill 1036 yesterday, which clarifies Colorado Open Records Act requests. In a statement, Hickenlooper said, quote, "We believe that this legislation is imperfect but necessary. The approaching 2012 general election could be the largest in Colorado's history, and with our position in the national spotlight, we must ensure the integrity of the election process. This bill clarifies the security and chain of custody for ballots throughout the election season, making certain our elections are properly administered." End quote. Hickenlooper added that nuances in the bill, including protecting access for Colorado's two Ute tribes, are worth further exploration by the General Assembly. But he said they were not of sufficient weight and gravity to justify a veto. The Denver Post reports that election integrity activists had flooded the governor's office with letters asking him to veto the bill. Now, several of those opponents plan to file a lawsuit to stop the law from taking effect. The bill prohibits county clerks from fulfilling a Colorado Open Records Act request for ballots for 45 days before an election and until an election is certified. It creates an exception during that period, however, for, quote, interested parties, defined as candidates whose races is subject to recount, the candidate's political party, and others. The Post reports opponents argue that exception creates a privileged class of people who may inspect public documents at a time when others in the public or media may not. The Colorado County Clerks Association pushed for the legislation after a ruling last year that made voted ballots public record. The clerks were concerned open records requests for ballots might overwhelm their offices, particularly around election time. They also worried that releasing ballots along with other election records may allow the public to determine how some people voted. The Delta County Commissioners and County Clerk were among 29 counties that endorsed the legislation and asked the governor to sign it. In February, the U.S. Department of Justice filed a complaint against two gas companies, Gunnison Energy and SG Interests, for antitrust and false claims violations during a federal auction for leases in the Ragged Mountain area. At the same time, they filed a proposed settlement requiring the companies to pay a total of $550,000. The public comment period on the settlement has ended, and now the department has decided it's too expensive to post those comments in the Federal Register. KVNF's Arianna Brocious has more.
The 60-day comment period for this settlement closed in early May. Several Western Slope environmental groups and local governments filed comments during that period asking the department for harsher penalties on the gas companies. According to a motion filed on Thursday, the department received 79 public comments on this case and is preparing its response. All of those documents will be filed with the court and are required to be made public. Usually, the department does that by publishing in the Federal Register, along with a few major newspapers. But they say for this case, the high volume of comments and cost of publishing are prohibitively expensive and would be in the ballpark of $83,000. In addition, the department makes the case that their proposed alternative, publishing online, can serve the public just as well, if not better, than the Register. In Thursday's motion, the department asked to be excused from publishing the comments for this case in the Federal Register. Instead, they propose posting them on the department's Antitrust Division website. They'll post the web address where those documents are located in the Federal Register. All parties in the case are unopposed to the motion. For KVNF News, I'm Arianna Brocious.
The U.S. Air Force is taking back a proposal to establish a vast training area for low-altitude flying over the mountains of Colorado. The Aspen Daily News reports that the announcement came on Wednesday. Various local groups have questioned the proposal and called for a more thorough evaluation of the impacts flights would have on wildlife, tourism, avalanche safety, and other concerns. The Daily News reports that the plan would have allowed military aircraft to fly as low as 300 feet above the ground over a nearly 61,000 square mile area, including the Elk, Sawatch, and San Juan Mountains. The plan would have also allowed up to 3 training missions a night over the zone, which included New Mexico. First Lieutenant Stephanie Schoenberger told the Daily News that the Air Force is now officially taking a step back and reevaluating the plan. They want to make sure the plan meets the military's changing training needs and that it's responsive to the concerns raised in the more than 1,600 public comments the proposal's environmental review generated last fall. The Daily News reports that the Air Force could come back with an amended proposal, a new environmental review, or begin a process for a more thorough review in an environmental impact statement. But Schoenberger said none of that would occur before 2013. Warm weather all spring has led to below-average snowpack across the state. According to the Natural Resources Conservation Service, recent data confirms that the statewide snowpack reached maximum accumulation on March 7th. That's more than a month ahead of the average peak date. In addition, the snowpack disappeared about a month early as well. According to the agency's June report, the statewide percentage is now just 2% of average, with most basins reporting no measurable snow. The agency reports that stream flow volumes this summer are forecast to be their lowest since 2002, around 30% of average. The best news for water availability this spring and summer is state reservoir storage. The agency reports that of June 1st, storage statewide had decreased from last month, but was at 98% of average and 61% of capacity. This stored water should provide some reprieve from potential shortages this summer statewide. However, water users in all basins should be prepared for late-season shortages. Now an update on Western Slope wildfires. The Little Sand Fire, 13 miles northwest of Pagosa Springs and south of Lake City, has grown significantly since we last reported to over 6,300 acres. The fire is in rugged and inaccessible terrain north of the Piedra River. It is 30% contained and spread is mostly to the northwest. 80 firefighters are on the fire and no estimate for containment has been made public. As previously reported by KVNF, the Sunrise Mine Fire north of Paradox is fully contained and in mop-up phase. 30 local firefighters are still on the scene working hotspots until the fire can be declared controlled. And just so you know, the largest fire in the West, the Whitewater Baldy Complex north of Silver City, New Mexico, is still a very active fire at 267,000 acres and only 30% contained. There are 900 firefighters on that fire. And finally, here's a story about a very Colorado wedding. The Grand Junction Daily Sentinel reports that last weekend, Anna Schmaltz and Neil Erickson celebrated their wedding at the Pavilion at Ridgeway State Park on the banks of the Uncompahgre River. They enjoyed their first kiss as a married couple, their first dance, and their first bear sighting. Neither of them had ever seen a bear in the wild until that first dance. While dancing, a 300-pound black bear waded across the river and joined the party. We're not sure if he wanted to cut in or if he was interested in the ribs. A park ranger who happened to be a guest at the reception took charge and kept guests safely away. Mark Erickson, father of the groom, said, "We were fighting against chipmunks that wouldn't stay off the pie table, and we thought that was going to be our big problem. Thankfully, no one was hurt, including the bear," he said. Here, closer to the North Fork, another black bear was seen on Highway 92 west of Rogers Mesa yesterday morning at about 8, headed towards Delta. This concludes the morning newscast. For KVNF News, I'm Brian Cambria.